RadioMD.com.
The eye care revolution is here. Time for the Wizard of Oz. Here's Dr. Robert Abel Jr.
Today we're going to discuss insights to sight, or the art of observation. We're very fortunate today to have Rick Dark with us, who is a landscape architect, a distinguished professor of landscape ethics, and the author of a new book called The Accidental Landscape. He's going to tell us, I believe, a little bit about why we just don't see things, why we have to see things enough to understand. So, Rick, please tell me about your background and how did you get to this distinguished position?
Well, it's been a long road. It's been a fun road. I came down here from Jersey, as they say, to go to school as an engineering major at the University of Delaware, and found that I was, even though I loved the subject, it was out of my culture. And I switched to art, to anthropology, to cultural geography, and then finally settled in botany, and then wound up working at Longwood Gardens for 20 years, learning about the world's flora. And all the while, I was basically learning to see. I didn't know it. I didn't know that that would become the most important thing. But in the long term, that's been it. Because everything I've done, whether it's been art or cultural geography or botany or landscape work, is required that you can look at things and then, as you say, get some insight from them and then take that and strategize from that.
So tell us what's covered in your book, The Accidental Landscape.
The Accidental Landscape is a chapter in a book called The Good Gardener, and the book is a compilation of chapters by folks who did keynotes for an international symposium that actually took place 2 years ago at the University of Delaware. There were people from Australia and England, that chapter is it's really aimed at people who are in either architecture or landscape, who are interested in the flux that's inevitable in any kind of a modern living space, living landscape with a lot of biology going on. And the premise is that so often we are trying to impose order on landscape especially, and we do it by straight lines, we do it by very easily perceived patterns, when really there's quite a bit of very meaningful, very functional order there. And my tack has been to try to show clients and people that I'm working with or students how to see that order that we are basically blinded to by our reliance on very overt order.
You know, you mentioned in your experience and your journey to where you are now that observation is very different than just merely looking at a site. How do you teach this? How do you share this with your college students?
Well, with the college, I along with Sue Barton, we teach a course in plants and human culture, and it's a wonderful course because it's Sue, who's on the faculty at the University of Delaware. She got it certified for multicultural credits and science credits, so even though it's actually in plant science and botany, we get mostly non-major, so it's fun for me because I'm not teaching the choir. And so I can assume that I shouldn't make any assumptions on what they know. I should just assume they are young people, and they've got brains, and they've got eyes, and they've got the time to devote to practice looking. One of the examples of the kind of way that we try to prize their mind open is we have the opportunity to take them out for walks. And if you... we've done this before. You leave the main part of the University of Delaware campus, and I say to them, okay, here's your task. We're going to go for a walk from Gore Hall, let's say, on the main campus, and we're going to walk just, you know, a little bit more than a half a mile over to the beginning of the White Clay Creek, and I want you to start telling me when you see plants that you don't think anybody planted. In other words, things that are there more or less happenstantially by chance or by accident. And so that's it's a very broad directive. It's not the kind of normal design teaching that people would get, but anybody can do it. You don't have to have any prerequisites. You can just use your common sense and say, okay, I'm going to just look at anything around me and try to figure out anything that might have planted itself. And that's one of those examples of where you get all kinds of different reactions, and by the time we come back from those walks, they will never see the landscape again the same way. They will always have this new tool that puts another filter on it.
So that's kind of like the exercise for the neophyte. The eye and brain are intimately connected. So in a sense, you're trying to explore and use that connection.
I'm trying to get them out of the familiar. You know this, we begin without a lot of filtering, and as we grow more experienced and we become adults, we filter out the familiar because it's more efficient to focus on the new. But in fact, there's so much value in looking again and again at the familiar to realize that there's so much that you didn't see the first time or even the 50th time, that you can keep looking. And with a bit of directed effort, you can look at the same thing a million times and each time see something new in it.
If someone were listening today and said, this is curious, what can I do on my own just as a way to explore what I'm seeing and understanding it?
Well, you know, we're in an age now where everybody is saying technology is just becoming so pervasive and so overwhelming that we got to get away from it. We talk about, you know, a last child that left, children not getting outside because all they're doing is focusing on some little phone or some little screen. But my tack has been that there's no point in railing against the ubiquity of modern technology, that instead, if we took these truly ubiquitous cameras that are in phones, they are actually in cameras, they're in all kinds of devices, and instead of saying, let's just let the internet be a push medium and let it entertain me, take those devices and turn them on the landscape you walk through. It could be your yard, could be a garden, could be just your way to the grocery store, and capture things and then look at what you've captured. Basically use the camera as a tool, because now it doesn't even cost anything with a click. You can take photographs, you know, almost infinitely without any additional expense once you've got the device. So why not play with that as a way to record things that augments what your mind's eye sees?
Kind of as an extension of that thought, why not take a picture of your phone and then look at the video, let's say, or the still image, and then go out and retrace your steps and see what you see differently or more completely?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've made a signature of taking photographs of various landscapes over long periods of time. I started a study that really confirmed the value of this for me back in 1983. I was working at Longwood Gardens. I was living in Newark, Delaware, and I, at that time, had decided I really wanted to try and make a garden that reflected the woods and the streams and things that I love around here. But at the time, there was very little at Longwood that could teach me that, and so I thought I'm going to find some places to take photographs of repeatedly. And the one that I chose, which is on my way to work, was crossing a bridge over the Red Clay Creek. And at the end of a year, I actually had 500 photographs taken from that bridge over the course of 1 year. And when I started reviewing them, I realized that there were things that I had deliberately taken photographs of, a certain day with certain color or a bird or something, but other things that appeared to me only when I reviewed the photographs in series.
So a man must make many steps in order to become an observation savant. And it's rather important to know that. And it's very important to know people like you, Rick, that can share that with us. So I hope that we'll go to your book, The Accidental Landscape,